Coming up on Tech News Today, Facebook tells your boss to stop it, at least your future boss, maybe. Also, disconnect from everything, and are web apps better than app apps? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, March 23rd, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring Curve Control to help protect against crashes on curves. Look for Curve Control, available in the 2013 Ford Taurus, and you can learn more at Ford.com/cars/Taurus. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT3. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Ayaz Akhtar is on assignment or vacation.
He said he was going to get on a plane and go have breakfast somewhere else.
Nice.
Fine.
I like that. That's forget you guys.
Enjoy it.
I'm having breakfast somewhere good.
That's right.
I'm out of here. But he will be back on Tuesday. Meanwhile, we have plenty of tech news for you today, including Facebook telling your boss to shut up.
Kind of. There was a story that was brewing earlier in the week that got a lot of people riled up. One of the big ones came from the AP, which described scenarios where people who are looking for work, and hey, in this market, a lot of people are looking for work, were asked to share their Facebook passwords with the prospective employers. The idea is that employers, and most of these cases, I should say the majority at least that we know about, ended up being public agencies, so law enforcement positions, police officers, 911 dispatchers, people who they really need to prove that they're on the right side of the law, let's say. The idea
people
is
people who
is
need background checks.
Exactly.
Generally speaking,
sure.
Sounds like.
Exactly. But it's the type of thing where it's like, well, you might have some sort of an online social network persona, but all the restricted stuff, particularly in Facebook, is where we might learn a lot more about you. Now, of course, this has raised the ire of many who say this is not unlike somebody busting into your home and rifling through your things to try to find embarrassing photographs and things like that. This shouldn't be legal.
Except for the fact that you don't give, you know, prospective employers the keys to your house.
Well, but I mean, when it's digital versus...
Sure.
The lines are blurred, let's just say, and Facebook agrees. Chief Privacy Officer Aaron Egan says, in a statement released today, Facebook takes your privacy seriously. We'll take action to protect the privacy and security of our users, whether by engaging policymakers or, where appropriate, by initiating legal action, including shutting down applications that abuse their privileges. Facebook also says companies really need to watch out for this stuff. For example, if an employer used Facebook to find out that someone who wants a job at the company is a member of a protected group, let's say it's related to maybe age, race, orientation, things that can be discriminated against later, that company could open themselves up to claims of discrimination if then they don't hire that person, because the person could say, well, you found out about this thing that I'm involved with that you wouldn't have known about
public,
otherwise.
Right? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, you could look at somebody's Facebook page and find out if they're black or find out if they're gay in many cases.
Sure.
But if there's some other protected class, especially sexual orientation maybe in some cases, that is hidden from the public view, that could be discovered when you're logging in.
Yeah, and it would possibly be hard to prove that the company
pregnant. I think pregnant would be
well.
A very... Because that is one that you cannot not hire someone because they're pregnant. And in the early stages, you may not be able to tell by looking at them.
Sure.
But you might be able to tell if you logged into their Facebook
account. Absolutely. And Facebook's not alone. Both Illinois and Maryland lawmakers are considering bills that would forbid public agencies from forcing a prospective employee to give up the keys to their social network. Senator Richard Blumenthal, who's a senator from Connecticut, is actually drafting legislation that would outlaw the practice of employers asking for any login credentials to any social networkings and email accounts. Facebook, by the way, says that sharing a password or making someone give you the password is in violation of their user agreement. So it's not kosher. And if you say, well, email address, I mean, that's just crazy. Who would do that? It's funny. Turns out last year, the city of Bozeman, Montana, at least for their city government employees, ended a longstanding policy of asking job applicants for passwords to their email addresses. They're not doing it anymore, but they were doing it for quite some time until somewhat recently.
Yeah, and I actually, as crazy as this is going to sound to a lot of people in our audience, I understand the impulse. Having been through background checks before, they're basically saying, look, we want you to open up and tell us everything about your past because we're going to try to find it out anyway. Mm-hmm. And if we find out something that you were keeping hidden, it's going to mark against you. So tell us all the drugs you've used. We won't be prosecuting you. This is part of the background check. So I could see a natural outgrowth of that saying, let us into your Facebook account. That way there's nothing in there that we would find out later that, you know, you might have forgotten or hidden or something.
Right.
But it sounds creepy and it shouldn't be done. I mean, as a matter of policy, it should be like, no, that's not okay. When you come to my house for the background check interview with my family, you don't get to go and rifle through the house and search it. And that, to me, is the analog here.
I just think of it the hacker way. You know, when it comes to, like, encryption, I use, you know, TrueCrypt because you get the plausible deniability with hidden volumes. Same way with Facebook, you should maybe be considering having an alternate profile where you just love kittens.
Now,
or puppies.
Right, a hidden profile, like on TrueCrypt.
Yeah, this is my profile just for the employer.
It's like my Yahoo Mail.
Mm-hmm.
It's my address I use when I don't want anyone to ever get a hold of me.
There you go.
Right.
Sorry, Yahoo, but it's true.
Now, this isn't against the law right now. It may be against Facebook's terms of service, which mm-hmm. is a different sort of legal matter, but there's no law against a company asking you for the password. So the fact that, you know, we've got a few senators on the case here, state senators in Illinois and Maryland, a federal senator in Connecticut drafting legislation, that may be a good step, but that's going to take a while. In the meantime, what should people do?
Just say no.
Well, but that again, and a lot of people would, I mean, I know that I would. But then again, it's, hey, you know, if you're looking for a job, mm-hmm. you've been
you're
out
desperate.
Of work for a while,
yeah.
you're in a tight place, you got a family, you've got a mortgage. I think this is the issue, and this is why people are getting so upset, because you're almost forcing the hand of somebody who really wants this job otherwise. And, you know, maybe they're not required to give the HR manager their Facebook password, but maybe they're required to friend the Facebook manager the employment, the HR manager on Facebook, that sort of thing. I mean, there are a lot of
wait a minute.
Ways
that happened
that,
here.
Yeah.
Our CEO is friends with all of us.
She's also
but she was
our
clever
manager.
About it. She never made it mandatory. Yeah. It was just like, hey, I want to be.
Well, but you only friended her with your clean profile where you only love kittens and puppies, right?
Well, I actually both my profiles love kittens and puppies. I'm not a kitten and puppy hater, Darren, okay?
Are you sure?
That's the third profile.
So yeah, I think the short answer is yeah, just say no. But in some cases, people feel like they can't.
Now, related somewhat to this story, two things. One, Facebook changed their privacy policy today in the most minor way possible. And with like a week's worth of notice, taking public comments, and they're still getting heat for changing the name of the privacy policy to data retention policy and for some very minor word tweaks in there. But also, Gizmodo had an essay from Matt Honan up today called The Case Against Google. Liz Gaines over at All Things D wrote a reaction piece to that of saying that Google needs to explain the benefits of letting them handle everything. And on top of that, Google engineer Brian Kenish, who created a Facebook Disconnect Chrome extension, has announced a new extension for both Google and Twitter. Now, the way these extensions work, they disable all traffic from third-party sites to the Facebook servers, or in the Twitter and the Google cases, to Twitter and Google servers, but still allow you access to the site itself. The Facebook Disconnect extension has over 400,000 weekly active users, so he's actually started a company called Disconnect.me, along with another ex-Google engineer, Austin Chow, and consumer rights advocate Casey Oppenheim. They're launching Google Disconnect and Twitter Disconnect for Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. Facebook Disconnect already exists for Chrome, Firefox, and Safari. They just added the Firefox and Safari extensions. These good extensions, Darren, or are there better extensions
you
could use?
What I find interesting about this is, you know, like when I want to do something online that I just really don't, you know, want Facebook's like button on every single page on the internet or whatever, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, to be tracking me, I just use one, either incognito mode, which is to say like Control-Shift-N in Chrome or whatever it is in the rest of the browsers, where you have a kind of a sandbox, separate cookie, not logged into your other stuff mode, or I use like a Firefox browser that has the Onion router built in. That's a little bit kind of on the paranoia side, this plugin is good in that, you know, it kind of addresses the issue in a way that for most consumers is actually going to be feasible. I mean, this is not that inconvenient, and that's the problem with security, is it's convenience.
Although it's three different extensions, it'd be nice if they were bundled and you could just pick services.
Right. And I guess, you know, the only reason why I am not like a fan of this on the hacker perspective is because I haven't seen anywhere where they are hosting the source code to this, so I don't think there's a way to vet it that way.
You think it's a clever ruse to track you?
Well, considering it is an extension,
yeah,
yes,
right.
It does have the ability to track you. And I mean, somebody could just fire up a packet sniffer and just tell real quick if that does it or not. I'd like to see the independent audit of this before I actually install it and rely on it. Until then, I'm just going to use ngrep, tacv, tacn, facebook.com, tack to kill the TCP connection, and then tacki, your interface, like ETH0.
Well, sure. Your mom does that, right, sir?
Yeah, every day.
Yeah.
She's very paranoid.
Yeah.
She greps.
You got to ngrep. Before you Facebook.
Do we think that people are going overboard with this? I think these are great extensions. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to come off as saying I'm against Disconnect.me. I think it's actually a very good service for people to make smart, informed choices about what kind of data they want to share. But are we over paranoid about what kind of data we share? I mean, do I really need to worry
about
this?
This is the knee jerk. This is the backlash of, like, you know, like all of these people who have, you know, there was this like, oh, we're not going to care about security or privacy or anything. Oh, you know, the honeymoon is over there. And now we're all connected with the smartphones and everything else on these things. And then, like, just lately, it has just been a rush of these privacy stories. And so this is, you know, a tool spawning out of that. Just like, you know, we were talking about the anonymous OS, you know, last week. It's the same kind of, you know, just the pendulum swinging the other way. And it's good for consumers. I don't know if this is...
Yeah, because it gives them lots of tools to protect themselves.
Right.
I think that's the key, is that when we all heard about Google, you know, whittling down their 17 privacy policies, or 70, I think it was, to just the one, it's like, well, you know, now the government's looking at Google and we got to deal with some antitrust issues. But what do I do? What does Sarah do if I don't agree with what Google's doing and I want to try to take back some of my own rights? I think that's what Disconnect Me is going to appeal to people about, because it's allowing, you know, whatever happens with these big companies who are collecting our data and sharing it with other people, and government organizations who could shut them down. I can't shut them down, but I can at least take back some of the power of what I'm sharing.
Yeah, I'm all about having the power of choosing what information needs to be shared in my hands. I don't want it in anyone else's hands. I want full control over my information. But I also think, and I got some flack from a guy on Twitter for saying this, I also think that it's not bad to share some data with corporations, to let them know a few things about you, to give you better ads. I don't want to see irrelevant ads about, you know, feminine protection. That's not so letting them know that I'm a, you know, 41-year-old male, I don't mind. That's not a big deal, because then I get an ad that is relevant to me, if I'm going to get an ad at all. I do, don't get me wrong, want to have the ability to say, you know what, I don't want any ads at all. I don't want to support these. And I know what kind of ramifications that could have. Companies could go out of business because the ad model doesn't work. But I think other business models could arise. I do think we overreact and like, no, I don't want them to know anything about me. And it's like, well, you know what? That's kind of overdoing it. What harm could come from a limited amount of information that you know they have?
Yeah.
And that you have control over? Joshua Caleb, by the way, in the chat room points out that Disconnect, the Chrome extension, allows you to handle Dig, Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Yahoo without requiring any setup. So all in one extension. So it is combined.
And I also have to give props to T2T2 for pointing out, and I just actually cloned it on Git, that it is on GitHub as Disconnect, and it's all JavaScript. So I'm looking at the code right now.
All right, let's move on to probably the most important story of the day. Our short, almost unnoticed national nightmare is over. Rovio has clarified Angry Birds Space will be coming to Windows 5.
Oh, thank God. Oh my God. Crisis averted.
Initially, Peter Vesterbacka, chief marketing officer for Rovio, had told Bloomberg that supporting Windows Phone would mean rewriting the game, and he said Rovio would skip development for Angry Birds Space. And, of course, panic ensued. Markets crashed. Countries went into revolution. But executive Mikael Head at Rovio told Reuters this morning, "We are working towards getting Angry Birds Space to Windows Phone 7. We are working closely with Nokia to bring our games to their platforms. Our mutual goal is to bring the best possible experience to our fans, including fans using Windows Phone devices. So rest assured, your Windows Phone will not go without.
Woohoo!
This is just a wonderful day.
It is. It
it's
is.
Gonna
cry.
I'm
gonna
give you a, moment to soak up the relief.
So it's really a coming of age for Windows Mobile. The platform is, it's like Doom on when Doom
it kind of is. Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
Well, it's not come of age yet because they still don't have the app. They just said, "Oh no, no." When you guys got all mad when we said we weren't going to do it, we didn't mean that.
We have a due date.
Totally going to do
but
it.
But they might have Knee Deep in the Dead, Doom. Just saying.
You actually can run Doom on Windows Phone.
Well, there you go.
You have come of age. You can also write Hello World on Windows Phone. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Ford, featuring Curve Control. Curve Control is part of a suite of safety technologies on the 2013 Ford Taurus. Helps drivers maintain control of their vehicle when they're taking a curve too quickly. Maybe they don't even think they're taking the curve too quickly. You've heard your wheels squeal a little when you take a curve, or you felt a little tilt and you're like, "Ooh, I guess I took that a little quickly." Curve Control makes sure that never happens. You never even get close to danger. Here's how it works. It calculates 100 times every second your roll rate, your yaw rate, your lateral acceleration, your wheel speed, your steering angle. You don't even need to know what those means. It's calculating what your car is doing and how quickly that vehicle is turning. And then when it finds a problem, when it says, this is a little too steep, this is a little too sharp, it reduces engine torque, applies four-wheel braking, and slows the vehicle as much as it needs to, up to 10 miles per hour in 1 second. And it doesn't matter if the pavement's dry or wet. It will make sure that the wet pavement's the one to really worry about. It'll make sure that you take that curve safely. Curve Control helps protect while driving on curves, and it's on several new driver assist technologies. It's one of several new driver assist technologies available in the 2013 Ford Taurus. As someone pointed out in email, you can't test drive the 2013 Ford Taurus yet because it's not at the dealerships, but go test drive a Ford. See what kinds of technologies they have in there and learn more about the 2013 Ford Taurus at Ford.com/cars/Taurus. And we thank Ford for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into the news. The Pew Internet American Life Project has another survey out today.
They are busy.
They're busy folks over there. 35% of respondents to this survey, which was a diverse but non-random sample. They avow this. They're like, look, we went after 1,021 technology stakeholders and critics. We were going after experts, people who use the internet a lot. They conducted it from late August through October in 2011, and they found 35% of those respondents see apps as the dominant way to deliver content, while 59% chose the web. So maybe a little surprising. You know, we all think, oh, everybody's all about apps these days. But more of them said, no, the web is the way, is the dominant way I want to get my comment or my content.
Yeah, duh. I mean, we're only in, like, this is kind of, you know, just like a, hopefully, just like a little bump of appdom. And then we'll get over this and get back to the web, because at the time that the apps were having their crazy fun, it was when, you know, we're stuck in pre-HTML5 stuff. And as that platform matures, hopefully it'll take back over.
Now, what's interesting about this study, the people who said, no, web, because they actually said, here are two resolutions. One is that apps are the best way. One is the webs are the best way. Which way do you agree with? The people who said web were very philosophical. They said, no, openness always wins, freedom, all the things
exactly.
You just said are the reason why web is going to win. The people who thought apps were better were just like, I don't know, apps are better. They didn't express a philosophical difference. In fact, as one respondent put it, people never cared about the web versus apps and devices. They want free stuff, entertainment, and services when they want them and on the device they have in front of them. And you know what the survey found is that most people don't even really know the difference, low-level users, between
honestly,
apps and web.
If you open up your Bank of America app, I almost said faux pas website, because guess what? That's what it is. It's just an app front end.
It's a little bit different now, but when it first launched,
bit different.
It was just the website.
There are a lot of apps that just do that are just basically an app loader for a website on the back end, and because that's good enough. And honestly, the beautiful thing about it is if I want to publish something for all platforms at once and I don't have to worry about, oh, the Windows license and the Apple license and the Android license, guess what? HTML5, you know, come up with your own license. You're ready to go.
I think people are optimistic that HTML5 is the way of the future. I certainly hope that it is. I also think that apps have become these self-contained programs that in many cases work very well. Sometimes they're kind of just web skins, but sometimes they're built separately from the ground up. that people go, wow, this is awesome. I like this so much better than the web experience. This is great. So I think those are the people who are saying apps all the way, man. But apps are just going to change the way that the web works. We have been using the web and its various forms and iterations for many, many years. So I'm, even though I love apps and I like to download as many of them as possible, I also think that the web is the real winner. I think the web is going to be a lot more like the app world that we see now. It's going to take some time. But then again, the lines between our PCs and our tablets are going to be blurred further. I'm probably going to be touching my Air screen in just a few years, if it even takes that long. So I don't know how much it's an either-or situation.
Well, I the way I see it is the web is free and the web unites, while apps are proprietary and apps divide.
Patterson has a great comment. He says, at some level, it feels like cooks arguing about pans or carpenters about hammers. We just want the food or the house.
Yeah, okay.
We don't really care if it's an app. On the broad user end, we just want the content. Whatever the best way to get it to us is the best way. And you know what? He's absolutely right, because I believe that neither one, open or closed, ever wins. What happens is closed starts to ascend, and then open provides an advantage that closed can't provide, and everyone swings back to open for a while, and then closed catches up and says, aha, but we can do this better because we have more control, and then it swings back to closed for a while. And I'm not thinking about apps and HTML5. What I'm thinking about is AOL.
Yep.
When the internet started to swing to AOL, we had this same conversation, like, is the internet going to shut down? Is it all going to go into closed-off systems like CompuServe and AOL? Right. And is everyone going to go? And you know what? For a while, it did. For a while, the trend was that way, because AOL could provide things under its control in a better, more efficient way than the internet could, until the internet, the broader internet, started to go, aha, but we can do these things. You can't do that, AOL, because you're too slow and you're too closed. And of course, now we know that AOL is trying to find its direction. It's not that company that dominated in the late 90s again. And so I feel like that's the pattern. And right now we're in a situation where the trend is toward the closed. The trend is toward the apps, right?
Yeah, but it's going to swing the other way.
Exactly. Especially as HTML5 gets better and better.
I'm
and people
saying
get more
HTML5 is there. I mean, look at that. That right there is doom in HTML5.
You've showed Tom your screen like 5 times in the show. I have no idea what you guys are showing. Sarah,
it's doom screen in HTML5. What more do you need?
Yeah. Show the people.
Just wondering.
Oh, yeah, the people.
Sorry
about that.
And then describe it to the audio listeners.
Well, you are a space marine and zombies have infected the Mars base.
Right, that's enough.
Okay.
Let's move on to a Reuters Insight story. Reuters Insights is a series of longer form journalism that they do from time to time. And they have a really interesting story about Samsung today that's drawing a lot of headlines on the blogs that are all saying things like, aha, Samsung tells Apple to go F itself. That's not what's going on in this story. There are two main parts of the story that I think are worth reading about. One is they talk with Christian Lindholm. He's the chief innovation officer of a service design consultancy based in Finland called Fjord. And he says that Samsung's products are like soap. They get you clean, they lather well, but they, meaning Samsung, do not know how to make perfumes. Samsung is like a fantastic soap maker. Their products get you clean. However, they do not know how to make perfumes. And essentially, he's saying perfumes make you a lot more money. Perfumes are fancier and they're designed better. Soap will get you clean, but nobody gets all excited about buying Ivory
soap.
You have
to have a real special talent to make a good perfume.
Apple makes perfume.
That'll woo all the people with the disposable income.
I tend to disagree, actually. I think that, if anything, it may have taken Samsung a little while to get there, but I think they've definitely made some perfume. Case in point, the Galaxy Note. I've been rocking this thing since launch internationally. This is actually one of the not AT&T versions, the GSM Unlocked. And, I mean, look at it. This is my wallet. This is my phone. This is my HD camera. This is my video editor.
Yeah,
it smells
bad.
Pretty good. I mean, it's been in my back pocket for quite a while. That said,
old jelly beans.
And it's actually replaced I used to rock a leather wallet with a notepad because I would love to write, and I'm doing the same thing with the pen. And I got to say, all of that, it's because this has actually captured imagination. This has actually, you know, tickled what I call my techno lust, something that I haven't had a personal attachment to a device or loved a device like this since the Trio 650. The fact that 10 years can go by before somebody nails it. And sorry, Apple didn't nail it. Apple, I felt like the iPhone was just derivative, if anything, and that this is actually innovative.
But I think some of the folks who work at Samsung are very much on the defensive of people saying, well, yeah, you might have built this great product, but Apple's the one who gave you the idea.
Yeah, Lee Minhyuk, Samsung Mobile's vice president for design, said, I might not be at Johnny Ive's level yet, but I believe Samsung will produce such iconic products one day. It's not just effort that makes it possible for a new product to be a massive hit. It also has to be timely, and the technology should be ready to make a certain design a reality. And then reacting to those comments specifically that say Samsung's just ripping off Apple, he says, I've made thousands of sketches and hundreds of prototype products for the Galaxy. Does that mean I was putting on a mock show for so long, pretending to be designing? He got a little bit out of shape. Says, as a designer, there's an issue of dignity. The Galaxy is original from the beginning, and I'm the one who made it. It's a totally different product with a different design language and different technology.
Can you not hear that man's pride in that sentence?
And a lot of the blog
dude,
headlines,
if you made that, you'd be proud.
A lot of the blog headlines are trying to make it sound like he's ripping Apple. He's not at all. He says, look, I want to be as good as Johnny Ive, and I'm not yet, but that doesn't mean I didn't invent this myself.
I don't even think he should say he's not as good as anybody.
Don't self-deprecate.
Being humble. Yeah.
Right.
That's a culture thing.
I think that he's allowed to be extremely proud of all of his work, and shame on all of you for calling him just an old soap man.
Yeah.
He's a perfume maker.
They make beautiful soap sculptures.
Samsung makes great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're sort of getting past the point.
Apple.
Besides, you know, the patent squabbles between all of the companies and copyright and everything, it's like we're kind of getting past the point where we can say any one company is responsible for any design thing anymore. It's like cars. They all look the same now. They have for a long time.
Yeah, they slowly evolve.
Oh, except for the Reliant Robin. That thing doesn't look like anything else.
The new Jaguar.
In general, you know what I mean. You know, you get aerodynamic enough and everyone goes, all right. We'll just get a new color.
Yeah. Finally, the government of the United States says we can't keep people out of our networks. We're just going to have to try to keep an eye on them.
No, you can't. Foreign spies have penetrated the U.S. military networks. And what else is new? Now, this is all coming from a couple of people at the what was it called? It was, help me out here. It was like on C-SPAN, and I watched it. It was like 81 minutes. The Joint Committee of,
it was an open session.
It was an open session, and as such, it contained a lot of boring stuff and a lot of interesting stuff that was alluded to in later what was known as the closed discussion. So we don't know a whole lot about that, but a lot of interesting things coming out of here. James Perry, he's the director of Information Systems Analyst,
testifying to the Senate Armed Services Subcommittee.
Thank you. I knew it was a subcommittee of something. He says that he thinks that. That basically what we need to do is assume that the adversary is already on our network and that rather than protect the machines at the perimeter, it's a matter of protecting the data now. And, you know, there's a bunch of interesting people in this discussion, including a Dr. Wertheimer of NSA Research, who posits that who goes on. He's, you know, involved in like building cool stuff like, breaking encryption and developing tool sets and stuff like that. And his thing was that he is most concerned. He says that his fear before he goes to bed at night is that this country is not producing enough computer scientists and that we're not retaining computer scientists.
A lot of people have been saying that for a long time, not just computer scientists, but engineers as well.
Right. And he says that it's because of low pay. It's because of delays in promotion, wage freezes, and things of that nature, and that the U.S. just can't attract or keep talented computer science staff. Whereas a Dr. Gabriel of DARPA, we know them for, making
the internet.
Yeah, that's good stuff. He says that and I find this interesting in contrast, he says that the shelf life of cyber capabilities is short, or that the shelf life of even cyber skill is relatively short. He argues that half of his program of or his program managers, or what he calls these cyberpunks, he says they don't have master's degrees, you know, and that their insight actually comes from the experience within the cybersecurity community. And even then, though, they only have like a short shelf life.
Well, I would be fine with them not having master's degrees and a lot of experience if they're like Kevin Mitnick or Paulson level of skills. But what you're saying is they don't have either. It's a small amount of experience. Is that what he's saying?
No. He says that that the professionals that are in the industry that come from InfoSec, you know, they get that through not master's degrees. There aren't those for this.
Right. Okay. So he's saying what I'm saying, which is you want the people who are experienced.
Yeah, you want them. And so some other people are like, oh, we're not getting these great people from universities that we can keep for decades. And he's saying, well, you don't need PhDs for decades. What you need are the hacker kids that are good now.
Yeah.
Now.
Get them now.
Yeah.
STEM. Science, technology, engineering, math, all of that is a huge problem in the United States mm-hmm. that is being ignored and kind of swept under the rug by a lot of politicians because they don't want to deal with it, because it means that they have to deal with huge problems like immigration law, funding education, things that are not compatible with their messages on the campaign trail right now.
Right.
But it's really, over time, been ignored, and it's hurting the country.
And
it means that they're looking at our network saying there's so many spies in our network right now, we're going to have to treat it the way we treat real spies, which is we know they come into the country. Let's just try to make their life hard, but we can't keep them out.
Yeah, it's like the DOD admitting that. I mean, they even say in these articles that they oversee over 15,000 networks that are connected to over 7 million devices. And so at that point, I mean, it's almost like admitting defeat and being like, all right, so we got some bad apples.
You can't really start over.
Yeah.
You just have to.
It's like, oh, no, hey, we fixed the firewall. Nobody knew is getting in. Well, sorry.
Everyone turn off their computers.
Yeah.
Unplug
Walk
them.
Away.
Hand in your phones.
Yep.
Everyone update their firmware.
Well, no. Although, you know, I will say, like, this is really the right kind of mentality, and you should have, the perimeter is really only one
mentality.
Level of, like, the onion that is your security model.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
From the
good
folks
on
who
you guys for
you the onion router.
Yeah, well,
Naval
you.
Intelligence.
Hey, there you go.
Let's check the news views, or light it, or get dramatic. You know, of course, as a loyal TNT audience member, that Yahoo is suing Facebook over patent violations. You probably also know that Facebook just bought a few hundred patents from IBM. Now, Law 360 reports that a source told them that the lot of 750 patents that Facebook is buying from IBM were, quote, licensed to Yahoo. If true, it doesn't mean Facebook can yank those licenses, but it certainly gives Facebook a little more leverage in their discussions about this case.
Interessante. WP Central reports that AT&T has designated the Nokia Lumia 900 for company use. That means that sales folks can get the phone at no cost. However, it also means that they have to hand in their current company phone, be that an iPhone or an Android device or something else. In other words, Nokia is paying up to $25 million for AT&T employees to exclusively use the Lumia 900, and they expect about 80% of those employees to take them up on their offer.
Listen up, iPhone people. David Vieira-Kurz from InfoSec firm Major Security discovered that it's now possible to, get this, show a URL on one site while loading another in mobile Safari. So this exploit, it takes advantage of the way that Safari handles JavaScript's window.open function, and basically what it means is it's possible to load part of a page in an iframe while making it look like the page that you're on is actually, you know, part of somewhere else. And this is great for loading all sorts of fun, malicious stuff. The vulnerability has been reported to Apple, but be careful, kids, with those links, you know.
Heard or noticed that when the new iPad says it's 100% charged, sometimes it's not 100% charged, or it keeps charging after 100%? Well, you can blame math. Math did it again.
Damn it.
According
Mathgate.
To DisplayMate, the charge indicator on mobile devices is based on a mathematical model of the charge rates, discharge rates, and recent discharge history of the battery. That's a long way of saying they guess using math. In a report released today, DisplayMate says the math behind the latest iPad's charging indicator is wrong. They're just making bad guesses.
Math is hard.
For Apple.
IHS iSupply released a report late Thursday indicating you people aren't buying enough DVDs. I don't know what you're doing, but you're not buying DVDs. The report says that online views or paid transactions will hit 3.4 billion this year compared to 2.4 billion for physical copies. In 2011, physical videos easily stayed on top with 2.6 billion views compared to 1.4 billion for online. So that's a 135% year-over-year increase for online video. See ya.
Yeah,
we wouldn't want a DVD, yeah.
Ba-ding-ching.
That happened.
Wow.
That just happened.
Take that landful filth full of discs. Anyway, get this, NVIDIA fans, or maybe even ATI fans, actually. NVIDIA's GTX 680, it's getting rave reviews. But if you're into SLI, you may want to check with the Dutch site hardware.info. The site tested multiple cards in different SLI modes. And Engadget notes that SLI is complicated by the fact that NVIDIA's GPU boost technology, which varies the clock speed. So fortunately, hardware.info reports that there's no problems with SLI, but it did find that the GTX 680 doesn't quite scale as well as AMD's Radeon HD 7970 and this type of niche setup.
So it's not bad. It's just not as much better.
Well, it's bad if you want SLI.
Yeah. In other words, it'll work, but not like the 680 is awesome in everything but SLI. And SLI, it's human.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
But it's still got CUDA, so, you know, it probably works for the password cracking tools a little bit better. Just saying.
Call it insensitive, call it tactless, or call it plain good business. But AT&T is not letting the FCC get away with not feeling guilty about T-Mobile's layoffs. Jim Ciccone, AT&T's EVP of External and Legislative Affairs, wrote on AT&T's public policy blog today that, quote, normally we'd not comment on something like this, but that AT&T promised to preserve these very same call centers and jobs if our merger was approved. I'm sure that makes the laid-off T-Mobile employees feel so much better, AT&T.
Yeah, thanks for that. The SEC ruled last month that wireless providers must allow network neutrality resolutions on annual shareholder ballots. So guess what Verizon's proxy statement said this week? Shareholders request that company publicly commit, while not conceding or forfeiting, any issue in litigation related to network neutrality to operate voluntarily its wireless broadband network consistent with network neutrality principles. Say that three times fast. Verizon responded to itself that even the FCC doesn't require this, so why should the shareholders? We don't want to talk about it.
French visitors to internet sites which promote terror, hatred, or violence may be sentenced to prison. Oh. If French President Nicolas Sarkozy's has his way, who is up for re-election in the next month, played the child porn card, and that is to say, he has been quoted in saying, what is possible for pedophiles should be possible for trainee terrorists and their supporters, too. French anti-child porn laws currently call for 2 years of prison and roughly $40,000 in fines for repeat visits to child porn sites.
Think of the children. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
We know you've been burned, you've been hurt, you've been betrayed by human bird wings this week. So we bring to you a 45-foot paper airplane with a 24-foot wingspan that was launched yesterday by the Pima Air and Space Museum. If you can't trust the Pima Air and Space Museum in these day and age, by God, who can you trust? Outside of Tucson, the plane was inspired by 12-year-old Tucson resident Arturo Valdenegro, whose paper airplane flew the farthest when he competed against hundreds of children in a regional paper airplane distance contest held at the museum in January. So he got to meet with engineers who oversaw the design to build the 800-pound paper airplane that sailed 2,703 feet and went 98 miles per hour.
Apparently sponsored by Red Bull.
Yeah,
it was on the little landing.
Yeah.
Area.
I can see that.
Hey,
the museum needs.
Hey,
money.
At least it's real. I'm into it.
Exactly.
Is it? Is it real?
I know. We're gonna find out. The Pima Air and Space Museum faked this one too.
I need their Facebook password.
Yeah,
let's find out what's really going on. That's pretty cool.
All right. If you would like to start your own website that debunks airplanes, you can do it at squarespace.com. The fast and easy way to create a high quality website or blog. They are one of our sponsors here at Tech News Today, and we're happy to have them. Easy to use UI for creating and managing a website or blog, optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. They recently created a developer-friendly CSS editor that allows you to pop out the entire window in full. So if you are one of those experts, it's better than ever to get in there and do CSS. You can also more easily edit the HTML while in the WYSIWYG interface than you used to, too. I like the fact that they have added that feature in as well. They've added Google's complete web font library, over 300 fonts now fully integrated. If you're a font nerd, you're going to love that. And there's really no reason not to try it because you don't have to give them a credit card. You don't have to give them anything but the name of what your blog wants to be. If you've got a current blog at another service, you can import that. And if you're like, I don't want to give them all that data, you can take the data back out. They believe in data portability. So go try them out. Use their search engine optimizer. Put those reliable servers through the ringer and see if you like Squarespace. If you do, you can sign up with the offer code TNT3 and get 30% off for 3 months. That's squarespace.com. Use the offer code TNT3. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. What's on the calendar?
Well, the Canon 5D Mark III technically got into a few lucky people's hot little hands yesterday at B&H store, at least in New York. That's the one I know about anyway. But it is officially released to U.S. retailers today. So if you have $4,000 burning a hole in your pocket and you like really fancy cameras, this might be the camera for you. Also, new iPads available in Austria, Ireland, Mexico, to name a few lucky countries today. The iPad revolution is spreading across the globe. I'm sure some people are excited about that. Not me.
Somebody is.
Ugh, God, I've had, who needs them? The 4-day-long Microsoft Dev Connections Conference with a bunch of different separate shows, huge show for Visual Studio, Silverlight, SQL, Cloud and Windows, and more, is kicking off on Monday at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Probably the only hotel that has conference area big enough for something of this size.
Yeah.
A lot of folks there, yeah, at the MGM Grand. RIM says that some developers are going to get prototype next-generation BlackBerries come this May. And finally,
both
there's
of
a...
Both of you are going
to get them? Yeah. Oh, are you filling in for I as well?
I'm kidding.
I'm kidding. I own a playbook.
There
Leave me alone.
Three. Darren, tell us about the Hack 5 Wi-Fi workshop happening
We're
next
having
week.
It. It's next Friday at 7 o'clock at Noisebridge. If you haven't been, it's an awesome hacker space in San Francisco. So if you're in the Bay Area, come on out. Hack5.org/workshop and find out. We're going to have tons of these for everybody to build and learn all sorts of Wi-Fi hacking from the ground up in embedded hardware.
Excellent. Thank you.
I'll tell you how bad RIM's doing these days.
Yeah.
Even after that, nobody in the chat room even cared. Like, no one got mad. No one went, whoa. That's a bad sign. All right, let's finish up with some incoming.
Incoming message.
Chris Mitchell, who's been a guest on the show before, works for muninetworks.org, sent me this note today. He just spoke to two filmmakers who are in the end of a Kickstarter campaign to fund a documentary about the internet called War for the Web. You can find that on Kickstarter. We'll have the link in the show notes as well. They're planning to explain how the net works before explaining some of the net neutrality, SOPA, PIPA, other big fights. I'd love to see it get funded, and I think many in the Twit Army may be interested in this project getting funded. Next week, they will release another animation of how they plan to explain packet switching. They plan to explain nitty-gritty details to demystify how it all works before talking about how important it is that it remain open. This is something I've actually talked to Chris about doing a series on here at Twit, sort of explaining, like, this is how this stuff works. Steve Gibson on Security Now has done a great series about how the internet works. So the more of these kinds of things that are out there, the better. Check it out, Kickstarter.com. And if it sounds like something you're interested in funding, you might want to throw a few dollars their way.
They're almost halfway there. I mean, they only need 50 grand. And this is awesome. I've seen more and more films actually go to Kickstarter and, you know, get the funding that they need. Not to bring up the workshop again, but we're actually debuting a film. We're doing a sneak peek of a film called rebootfilm.com or whatever, that that's a hacker movie that they were able to do from Kickstarter.
Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next email says, hey, TNT, in regards to the story about Microsoft restricting the use of company money to buy Apple products, this isn't the first time I've heard of brand wars like this. Anheuser-Busch has done this for years. The company would give a company credit card to the employee that was specifically for buying friends, family, strangers, Anheuser-Busch beers. Overheard at the bar, hey, I noticed you were drinking a Miller. The next Bud Light is on me. It's not new. It's not likely that it'll go away. The company wants the employees to promote their own products, even if they might be slightly inferior, as it keeps company morale up. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So if Richard Stallman were sitting at the bar having a Miller, would he be able to get a free as in beer?
Well, you'd be able to tell him free as in speech. You were going to get him a free as in beer.
Yes, but I couldn't give him the recipe. That's proprietary.
That's right. Unless it was a craft beer that open sourced its recipe. Open source beer.
Oh, there is one.
That's happened, right? Yeah, I was going to say, this happened. Almost this sounds familiar as I'm saying
Hacker Beer
it.
Is one. There's another one that's Root with two zeros because
nice.
It's
elite. Yeah. Love that. And Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri. Yes, I know what you're talking about there, emailer. Thank you. All right. That's it for this edition of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web in our subreddit. Huh, thought I was going to go twit.tv on you early, didn't you? But no, we got to mention the subreddit. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place to go to let us know what stories you would like us to cover. It's not like a Bible or anything. It's not like we just take every story off of there. But we look at that to say, like, what are people interested in? Is there something we're missing? Is there something that's hot? So go there and vote. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Also, if you liked a certain moment on the show this week, let us know, because we want to put it in our best of show at the end of the year. Here we are in March, planning ahead. That's Jason Howell, man. The guy is on top of everything. So help him out. TNT at twit.tv. Put the subject line best of in the subject and let us know what you thought were some of the best moments so we can keep them all together and get you a best of show that's really good at the end of the year, like we always do. That's it. That's all.
Hooray.
Twit.tv/TNT.
Put
there.
A fork now, in it. We're done.
Now I'm going.
Yay.
You can also email us, TNT at twit.tv. Give us a call. Leave us a message, 260-TNT-SHOW. David Hewlett You might know him as Rodney McKay from Stargate Atlantis. Joins us on Monday. Really looking forward to that. See you then.
Ha ha ha.